before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
Hello and welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We've got a lot of great items and interviews this month, so let's get started with beer news. The Brewers Association, the trade association representing small and independent American craft brewers, released annual growth figures for the U.S. craft brewing industry. In 2018, small and independent brewers collectively produced 25.9 million barrels and realized 4% total growth, increasing craft beer's overall market share by volume to 13.2%. Retail dollar value was estimated at $27.6 billion, representing a 24.1% market share and 7% growth over 2017. Growth for small and independent brewers occurred in an overall down beer market, which dropped 1% by volume in 2018. The 50 fastest growing breweries delivered 10% of craft beer growth. Craft brewers provided more than 150,000 jobs, an increase of 11% over 2017. Quote, craft maintained a fairly stable growth rate in 2018 and continued to gain share in the beer market, said Bart Watson, chief economist of the Brewers Association. Small and independent brewers continue to serve as job creators, strong economic contributors, and community beacons, end quote. There were 7,346 craft breweries operating in 2018, including 4,521 microbreweries, 2,594 brewpubs, and 231 regional craft breweries. In the course of the year, there were 1,049 new brewery openings and 219 closings, a rate of 3%. Devil's Club Brewing in Juneau celebrated its first anniversary on Saturday, April 20th. We'll have an interview with them later in today's show. Barnaby Brewing reopened its new location in downtown Juneau on Friday, April 5th. The brewery was closed for almost a year following a fire last April. Despite its long closure, the brewery celebrated its second anniversary on April 18th. The Kenai River Brewing Company has crafted a Belgian-style saison especially for the Kenai Peninsula Orchestra. It will be released as part of an evening of art, music, and beer at the Kenai Fine Arts Center on Sunday, May 5th from 3 to 6 p.m. Tickets are $20 each, good for hors d'oeuvres and two servings of ale. Each additional serving is $5. Tickets are available at River City Books in Soldotna, Already Read Books in Kenai, and at the door. Bleeding Heart Brewery in Palmer also celebrated its anniversary on Saturday, April 20th. This farmhouse nanobrewery has been in business since 2016. Tickets are now on sale for the 9th annual Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival, which will take place from 5 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, August 10th, at the Soldotna Regional Sports Complex. The festival has also announced that the Young Dubliners will perform live from 8 p.m. until the close of the festival. Go to www.kenaibeerfest.com for tickets and more details. Parties on the opposite sides of the Humpies bankruptcy trial came to a settlement on April 16th in federal court in downtown Anchorage. which will keep the restaurant's founders, James Maurer and Billy Opinski, as owners of Humpy's, as well as adjacent bars, Flat Top Pizza and Pool, and Sub-Zero Micro Lounge. The settlement, which was reached as part of an arbitration ordered by presiding judge Gary Spraker 4 days before attorneys for the parties were to give closing arguments, was conducted by a judge from Oregon and will have to be approved by Spraker. Maurer and Opinski had been 60% owners at Humpy's and 40% owners of the Willowall property across the street, while co-owners Bob Jurassic and Dylan Buchholz had been 40% owners of the Humpy's properties and 60% owners at Willowall. According to the agreement, Maurer and Opinski will become 100% owners of the Humpy's properties and have no stake at Willowall, although they will have to absorb the nearly $2 million owed to creditors, most of that sum accrued by trying to maintain the struggling Willowall property. Jurassic and Buchholz will remain owners at Willowall, according to the agreement, a property owned by the Salamantoff Native Association. Jurassic has put forth a plan that would have stripped Maurer and Opinski of their ownership in both properties and given those shares to Salamantoff, which is the largest creditor. Haynes Brewing Company has received a USDA Rural Development Grant to assist with the installation of an additional 9.6 kilowatts of solar panels, which will double the brewery's solar production and offset 36% of its annual load. The Matanuska Brewing Company will be opening a second Anchorage location. This facility will be situated on 3rd Avenue in what used to be the Woodshed and after that the Brown Bag Sandwich Company that closed in May of 2019. The food menu will focus on New York-style sandwiches and salads. This facility, like the ones in Midtown and Eagle River, will receive its beer from the production brewery located in the former Matmade Dairy in Palmer. There are also plans to add a 5-barrel brewing system to produce one-off and specialty brews. On April 3rd, Beer Advocate magazine announced that it had canceled its print magazine after 11 years. I'll go into this story in more detail in this month's feature article. On April 2nd, the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau announced the acceptance of a record $2.5 million offer in compromise from Heineken USA Incorporated for alleged trade practice violations outlined in the Federal Alcohol Administrative Act, the largest such offer ever. According to the government, Heineken USA supplied alcohol retailers with its proprietary BrewLock draft systems at no cost between August 1, 2015 and March 26, 2019. The company also reimbursed retailers who purchased the so-called patented and revolutionary on-premise technology through disguised credit card transactions. Through its investigation, the government determined that Heineken was in violation of the FAA Act, specifically subsection 205, unfair competition and unlawful practices. In a press release, the government said the BrewLock systems were designed to only dispense products packaged in the unique kegs used by Heineken USA, which subsequently induced retailers into purchasing offerings made by the global entity. Additionally, it accused Heineken USA's importing arm of making slotting fee payments to retailers and disguising those transactions as permissible activities such as consumer sampling experiences that never actually occurred. For its part, Heineken USA confirmed that it had reached a settlement agreement with the government, but it stopped short of confessing to breaking the law. During the current legislative session, there are a couple of attempts underway to revise Alaska's alcohol licensing system. Last year, I reported extensively on Senator Peter Michicki's efforts to pass SB 76, a proposal to overhaul Alaska's complex and increasingly unworkable alcohol licensing system. That effort is underway again this session with SB 52. This bill is pretty much the same as SB 76 and enjoys the support of the Brewers Guild of Alaska and numerous other entities. Currently, it has passed out of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee and has been referred to the Judiciary Committee. Another bill impacting alcohol regulation is SB 96, which would give additional authority to first-class and home rule cities to control licensing within their borders. One of its proponents is Mayor Cottle of Wasilla, and we'll have an interview with him later in the show. In last month's feature story, I reported on the backlash against Bud Light's Super Bowl commercial, which made a point of the fact that Miller Lite and Coors Light use corn syrup as one of their ingredients. On March 21st, Miller Coors filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court for the Western District of Wisconsin that claims Anheuser-Busch's Bud Light Super Bowl ads and its subsequent transparency ads are part of a, quote, false and misleading advertising campaign aimed at deceiving health-conscious consumers. According to Miller Coors, Anheuser-Busch purportedly misled drinkers into believing that Coors Light and Miller Lite contain high fructose corn syrup with advertisements that discuss these brands' usage of corn syrup, a different product. Miller Coors is seeking an injunction to stop the campaign, unspecified monetary damages, and corrective advertising from Anheuser-Busch. Seward Brewing Company has announced that it will be opening this year on Wednesday, May 1st for the summer season. That's it for news. We'll be right back with the first of our interviews. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
KDLL Public Radio provides the news, interviews, features, and entertainment programming you trust from around the world and right here at home. Do you value local, responsible reporting or diverse music brought to you by your friends and neighbors? How about in-depth shows that are unique to your community? Then please support KDLL. We can't continue to bring you the local programming you enjoy without your support. Please visit kdll.org and click the donate button today.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. For our next interview, we'll be talking with Evan Wood of Devil's Club Brewing Company in Juneau. Hey, Evan, how are you doing today?
Hey, Bill, doing all right. Looking outside, it's some hail in the end of April, but everything else is doing fine.
Yeah, that seems pretty much par for the course this year. So for our listeners who aren't familiar, haven't been to Juneau, why don't you tell them a little and kind of give them a general background on Devil's Club Brewing?
Sure. Me and my two other friends each grew up in Juneau. We had the idea of starting a little taproom-focused brewery in our hometown right in downtown Juneau, and took about 4 years of effort and planning, and as of this past weekend, we've been open for 1 year. We have a tiny little four-barrel brewery downstairs on Front Street, and then we have a tap room on the other side of the building on Franklin Street where we pour most of our product. And we're really focused on variety. We brewed 48 beers in our first 9 months, released 48 different flavors, that is. And we're specializing in sour and funky beers, as well as kind of drifting more towards the hazy and new age IPAs that everybody needs. And we also do a lot of Belgian style beers. So we're trying to focus on a lot of different styles, always trying to keep something new on the menu, and really nailing down that variety that people want every day, something new.
So you guys came into this from a homebrew background, then no commercial brewing experience?
That's pretty much true. We each had a little bit of commercial experience in different parts of the businesses. Me and my business partner, Ryan, commercially brewed in South Africa for a little bit, helping our friend open a brewery down there. So we got a little bit of experience coming from the homebrewing scene, understanding what kind of changes at scale and operating the different type of equipment that you will at a larger scale. But, you know, all in all, it's pretty similar. And we're definitely we're homebrewers to start off.
You said you had a four-barrel system. Is that correct?
Yeah, four barrels. So every batch is about 125 gallons. We've got the capacity to do some double batches. We're constantly expanding on our fermentation volume because just like every brewery, as soon as we opened, we needed a bigger system. And so we've been expanding with wood. We just bought 2 7-barrel fooders, which for your listeners that might not know are these large wooden fermentation vessels, sort of upright barrels, but very large. So that expanded our volume about 25%, which will allow us to really push these sour and funky beers at a larger volume. More than half of our fermentation space is in oak. The original stainless steel that we started off with, we've been kind of expanding more and more into the wood fermentation, which has kind of differentiated us. We've been doing a lot of 100% oak fermentation, so not even aging in oak, but start to finish, the beer will live in the oak after brewing. It's been pretty awesome for flavor, and it's been really fun to experiment with different bugs and different strains of yeast that'll play differently in those barrels.
Typically, how many beers do you have on offer in your tap room?
We usually have about 8 to 10 beers on tap at any given time. Right now, we've got our signature IPA, our Couch Beach Belgian Blonde, the Silk Milk Stout, and those are the three staples that we try to always keep on tap. We're getting better and better at achieving keeping those always on tap based on production schedules, but those are our three flagship beers. Our signature IPA is a sort of East meets West Coast style. It's got a lot of new age hop flavor, a lot of fruits, a lot of grapefruit, Mosaic, and Amarillo on dry hops. So it's really fruity, but it still holds a malty backbone like a more traditional West Coast. Well, we like to say it's sort of in the middle. It's not as malty as these old school West Coast IPAs, and it's definitely not a juice haze bomb like these new East Coast IPAs, but we fall somewhere in the middle. And then beyond that, we've got three sour beers on tap right now, a Belgian amber ale that people have been really fond of, and we've got a blended imperial stout that we aged in whiskey barrels, and we've got a kelp gosa right now that was really fun to brew with some local friends who've been making kelp food, and we took some of their kelp and made a gosa with it.
Sounds really interesting. So I'm correct that you guys are selling everything 100% out your door, you're not distributing anything anywhere?
Not 100%, but close to. We do every once in a while have some excess volume, and we're happy to distribute it around town, always in kegs. So there are a few establishments around town that you can find our beer on tap at in Juneau, but nothing has ever left town. We have just started bottling. We bottle one beer. It's called the Rainforest Saison. And our Rainforest Saison is brewed with a locally harvested culture of yeasts and flora that we got off of blueberries this past spring. We pitched a bunch of blueberries into a beer, didn't pasteurize the blueberries and let those kind of funk up and sour a little bit during that blueberry beer's fermentation. And then we harvested that culture of yeast because we really liked what it was doing. And we've kept it going into a lot of different batches of Saison. And then we've kind of honed in on this recipe that we're calling the Rainforest Saison, which still has this culture. So it's pretty cool. It's not like a true spontaneous fermentation, but it's a sort of a pseudo-local spontaneous Saison that it really, to us, tastes like kind of getting a smack in the face with a branch while you're walking through the rainforest. It's got this really cool funk and sour character that is really reminiscent of the woods around town. And so we are bottling that. We're not distributing it outside of the building yet, but we are scaling it up to hopefully get some bottles up to South Central at some point this year.
I think I saw online you guys are doing crowlers as well as a growler fills.
Yep, we do crowlers. Okay. They're awesome. It's just such an easy way. You know, I'm myself the biggest hypocrite of selling growlers because I never get growlers filled. It's just kind of a pain to carry them around. And whenever you end up at a brewery, you never have your growler. And so it's crowlers are awesome. You can just fill them up on the site, can them up, take them on a hike. 32 ounces, perfect volume for one hike, in my opinion. So it's great to have that option on the go.
Yeah, I totally agree. They are super. You guys plan to make it to any festivals? Are you going to be at Haynes or any of the other festivals this year?
Yeah, we will be at Haynes, and we will be at the Capital City Brew Fest here in Juneau. I am actually currently exploring opportunities to come up to other festivals, but I don't want to make any promises quite yet. But we're trying to expand in that. But we're still, you know, we're just a year young, so we're still trying to get our feet out from under us.
Right.
And try to survive another summer here in Juneau.
Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't beat the drum about our two festivals here in the Kenai. Kenai Peninsula Festival in August and the Frozen River Festival in February. I don't think you guys have too many cruise ships in Juneau in February, so maybe you could pry yourself away and come on up here next year for Frozen River Fest.
Yeah, February would be good timing, actually. I didn't know about that one. Frozen River. I'll put it in my calendar and see if we can't make something happen.
Yeah, that sounds good. So what are you guys' plans for the future? Obviously, you say you're looking to, you already need to expand, but have you got any more specific plans?
We're basically on the production side of things. We've basically maxed out the space that we have now, but we're not at full brewing capacity. The brewery sits silent about half the week, so we can definitely expand fermentation volume still. We've just got another, got another 16 barrels on the way right now that we're going to squeeze in different nooks and crannies that will help us continue to expand volume at a sort of easy rate. And then we're hoping to expand fermentation volume again. Our space is really small. We're not really going to be able to fit another brewery into this space. So if we really want to switch to production, we're going to need to find a different facility and really get a 30 barrel system and kind of go for it. But at the moment, we're, you know, just a year in, we're taking it easy. Just try to max out our space here first.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to expand too quickly. What's your capacity on your tap room? Since I haven't had a chance to visit you yet, I don't have a good feel for actually how big your tap room is.
Sure. Well, you got to come down, Bill. We'll buy you a beer.
It's been a while since I've been Juneau, so I guess I need to go back.
Yeah, town's changing. There's all sorts of fun new stuff downtown. Our tap room it seats about 69 people, and we do food as well. We're open every day of the week from 2 to 8 p.m. We'll be expanding to lunch this summer and keeping lunch going forever once it happens. And we do pizza Wednesday nights. It's a pretty big local hit. Pizza night is on Wednesday. Every other night of the week, we do different sandwiches and wraps and appetizers. Our pretzel and beer cheese is the most popular item on the menu. But it's been fun to experiment with food and tie it into the beer and kind of go both ways with it. And the pizza has been a lot of fun. We do a new pizza menu every week, and we always have a theme, and we kind of use all sorts of crazy ingredients and try to turn other food items into pizzas. We've done a hamburger pizza. We've done taco pizzas. We've done spaghetti and meatball pizzas. There's no rules in the brewery or in the kitchen. We'll try anything and see if it sticks.
Well, that kind of leads into my next question. You've sort of answered a little bit, but I always like to ask it is, do you have any sort of a overarching philosophy when it comes to brewing? Have anything that you really want to focus in on or anything that you just are not interested in doing at all?
You know, it's been kind of a developing mindset, and we come at it from different perspectives in the building. So I myself have a science background, and so when I brew, I've always approached it very much from the science side of things, making sure all the ingredients are weighed out to the tenth of an ounce. And then my business partner, Jake, who's managing the brewery now, definitely comes at it from a more artistic perspective. He does it more by feel, more by look, more by taste, less by measurement and instrument. And so, you know, we can butt heads about that every now and again, but it's been fun to find a balance down there between those two aspects. And it's been a really cool learning experience for myself, kind of taking a step back from the analytical side and getting a little more romantic with the art of brewing and doing it a little bit more by feel. And so going forward from here, we're exploring, because Jake's managing down there now, we're doing a lot more of the art side of brewing, really allowing the yeast and bacteria that we're using kind of do their own thing as opposed to manage their fermentations. And so it's an interesting approach to brewing. I didn't know that we'd follow, but it's been a lot of fun. We've been experimenting with different rates of pitching yeast at different volumes, going far and above, beyond and below what the manufacturer recommends for using their different strains of yeast. We've been fermenting beers upwards of 90 degrees with saisons and having really good results, which is something that is just not usually recommended. But it's been a lot of fun. We're very focused on experimenting, and we're very focused on allowing and seeing what these different ingredients and yeasts and bacteria can do on their own without sort of the top-down management. That was one of the coolest things learning from our proprietary blend of yeast that I mentioned earlier that we cultured from the local rainforest. We kegged the first beer off when we thought it was terminal and put it in the cold room, and the beer kept fermenting at 40 degrees because that yeast is pretty happy in Juneau at 40 degrees. And so we kind of let that lager out before we finish it now and make sure it's way down, way terminal, and it continues to age pretty well at temperatures where ale yeasts would normally far give up. So it's been fun. We're getting a little more romantic, I'd say.
Well, that sounds good. Sounds like you're having a lot of fun experimenting.
Totally.
Well, hey, Evan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it. like I said, next time I'm in Juneau, I'm definitely stopping by, and I encourage any of our listeners who are over there maybe to have a word or two with their legislator to be sure to stop in and check you guys out.
Totally. Yeah. Session's still in full swing. We'd love to see anybody who wants to come in. And hopefully we'll see you down here soon, Bill.
All right. Sounds good. Evan, hopefully we'll see you over here for Frozen River Festival next year.
All right. Cheers.
All righty. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM. We'll be right back with our next segment.
Every year is a good year for jazz. Whether it's the Duke or Ella or someone newer to the scene, you'll find all your jazz favorites on A Good Year for Jazz with your host, Nathan. Each week, travel the calendar back to 1945, 59, or even 2015 to hear what was happening in the world of jazz. I'll meet you right here Monday night, 7 to 9, on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello, and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. In this month's feature, I'd like to talk about the continuation of a disheartening trend, the demise of craft beer magazines. Beer Advocate has announced that it has canceled its print magazine after 11 years of publishing. Debuting in 2007, the magazine was produced monthly until last year when it attempted to transition to quarterly. The last print edition of Beer Advocate, issue 133, released in the summer of 2018. Beer Advocate magazine joins Northwest Brewing News, Draft magazine, and All About Beer magazine as beer publications that have folded over the past 3 years. Similarly, in 2015, the Beer Connoisseur magazine canceled its bi-monthly print magazine, then transitioned to a premium web magazine before adding a new annual print edition this year. On April 3, 2019, Beer Advocate sent an email to its subscribers explaining the reason for the cancellation. Quote, "It's no secret that the media world has experienced rapid change over the last few years. The truth is the media landscape has long been defined by change, including the niche occupied by beer periodicals like our own Beer Advocate magazine. And change, while painful at times, can often be a positive. As with many businesses, that quick pace of change creates risk. In January 2018, we changed the format and frequency of our magazine from a 72-page monthly to a 112-page quarterly. There were a number of sound reasons for the switch, and we were optimistic at the time about the future of our print publication, which has featured award-winning writing and beautiful art and photography over the course of its history. But the frequency and format change was not enough to overcome some of the larger trends in the market, and as you have undoubtedly noticed by now, we unfortunately weren't able to fulfill our subscription obligations last year. So, as much as it pains us to make this announcement, we've decided that the best course of action is to discontinue the print edition of Beer Advocate magazine." End quote. Founded in 1996 by Jason and Todd Ahlstrom, Beer Advocate is an independent community for enthusiasts and professionals dedicated to supporting and promoting better beer, according to Beer Advocate's website. The site remains solely owned and operated by Jason and Todd Ahlstrom, with awesome support from their team of co-workers and volunteer staff. One of the major focuses of Beer Advocate has been beer festivals, which is expected to continue despite the end of its print magazine. According to the site, quote, "Since the Art of Beer Festival in 2003, Beer Advocate has continued to organize popular festivals and events every year, from social gatherings to charity fundraisers, online tastings to larger ticketed festivals. Beer Advocate events provide the beer community numerous opportunities to sample, socialize, and learn more about beer while directly supporting the industry." End quote. The end of Beer Advocate's print magazine marks a significant turning point for beer media in the United States. There now exists no independent, consumer-focused magazine in print for the craft beer industry. While Craft Beer and Brewing, Brew Your Own, and Zymergy are still publishing print magazines, these publications are primarily focused on homebrewing rather than the industry at large. As someone who thinks of themselves as a freelance beer writer, at least that's what it says on my business card, this situation is truly sobering. Everyone knows that print journalism has been having a rough go of it, With the rise of the internet and a growing expectation among the public that content should be both free and available at the click of a mouse or the touch of a screen. Still, you would think that with the continued growth of the craft brewing industry, magazines devoted to craft beer would not be folding left and right. I think part of the problem is the decision by many craft breweries to focus on their local markets. This is often a good thing. I've said many times how beneficial this hyper-local focus can be for establishing a bond of loyalty between a community and their brewery. However, it can also become an issue for the industry at large if not enough breweries are willing to spend money advertising themselves and their beers beyond their local community. Regional and national craft breweries like Sierra Nevada, Stone, New Belgium, and Dogfish are feeling the competitive pressure, and an easy place to cut costs is their national advertising budget. So at the same time that their subscribers are reluctant to pay for content, their advertisers are cutting back. That's a recipe for the sort of collapse we're now seeing in the world of print beer magazines. While understandable, it's regrettable because these magazines provided a great way for people, both old hands like me and newcomers and everyone in between, to keep up with the latest developments in the craft beer world. Take it from someone who has been a beer blogger for over 10 years. There's no comparison between the level of effort I put in writing a blog post to that I put forth writing an article I'm getting paid for. If you want to read quality professional journalism about anything, including craft beer, someone's going to have to pay for it. On a happier note, this isn't the first time we've seen a shakeout like this. In the late 1990s, as the craft beer industry was on a downturn, we lost several beer magazines, which were eventually replaced by ones like Beer Advocate. I can only hope that this cycle will repeat and that in a few years, we will again have several well-written and exciting beer magazines to choose from. Coming up next, we'll have another one of our interviews. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna.